to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 201. Looks like we're off to the races here. Dow up 90. We have the bill passed yesterday by the House. Lou, how are you? Are you with us?
Yes, sir. I'm here. How are you?
I was worried. I thought you'd be out of your dealership trying to buy the first $111,000 Jeep.
No, notwithstanding the fact that we're about to get they're calling for a potential blizzard here.
That's why you need the Jeep.
Jeeps are not big. You know, it's the Subaru that's the state car of Colorado.
Yeah, why is that? When you go out there, the Subarus are everywhere.
They're cheap. They have good all-wheel drive. And they're reasonably reasonably roomy for what I consider to be the the Colorado archetype, which is two people and a dog, and that no kids. So they handle reasonably well in the snow. I would rather see a Subaru, quite frankly, driving around than a lot of the electric vehicles, Priuses and the other stuff that come from people move out here from California or from the West Coast. And what they don't understand is that Denver, any snowfall in Denver is problematic because they do not plow anything except the absolute minimum, main streets. And so a 3-inch snowfall causes havoc if you're in a two-wheel drive vehicle, because you getting out of your neighborhood, you're sliding all over the place because they don't plow those streets, and it's a real problem downtown because again, lots of people going downtown, lots of people driving around, only a couple of the major streets plowed, and you're skidding all over the place if you're in a two-wheel drive drive vehicle. So everybody. I think after a while, people lived here for a little while. They say, you know what? I'm going to go with something all wheel drive. What can I get for under $40,000 or whatever that, is a good, is a good car. And that the Subaru meets the need.
I would challenge you to, find anybody who's ever owned a Subaru that ever owned any other car. Ever. Is anything bad about it, or didn't get a new one if they had a chance? And other than I think everybody I've known who's ever owned one always has a second one.
I think that's true here. What you see here is you see a ton of Subarus. You see and that seems to again, they're not huge gas hogs. If you don't see a Subaru in the person's, a native, what you end up with then is either a four-wheel drive pickup truck or, one of the big, Tahoe, what is the giant Toyota called? The Sequoias.
Yeah, yeah. Land Rover.
The whatever. Well, you see going the other direction.
On the lower end, Lou, I have the Suburban, the 3/4-ton Suburban.
Of course, with Biden's energy policy right now, gas is going to be over $4 a gallon before we know it. So maybe everybody will ditch those big cars and run out and buy Subarus.
Well, I'm going to say unless you're going down the alley like Matt and I were, where we were first through the drift, and needed clearance, I'm going to say on a regular slippery road, if you're in a Subaru and you put on winter tires, you're about as safe as you can get.
Oh no, I absolutely agree with that. The all-wheel drive, I drive an MDX, with all-wheel drive. I'm an absolute believer in all-wheel drive now, just as a matter of course. My wife drives a vehicle that has four-wheel drive, And I'm, you know, the only time I'm convinced that that's any better is when you're really literally off onto some really bad terrain or deep mud. Other than that, and you know, nobody in their right mind should be driving into that anyway. You know, other than that, the all-wheel drive system is much better, especially for the kind of just the kind of road conditions you see here again, because they don't plow. So you've got, you know, ice and everything else that develops on these side streets and on some of the main thoroughfares. All-wheel drive will catch you on that. Unless you drop the car into full-time four-wheel drive, which, again, those vehicles are not designed to be driven that way. Unless you drop it into full-time four-wheel drive for an extended period, you can find yourself surprised very, very quickly.
I have both on mine, and when you're in real snow, you want to be in just a regular four-wheel. But then again, see, we could go on, Lou. Now, the question is, do you have a limited slip rear? Do you have a limited slip front or a lacquer? Now, the best I ever had, I've had four-wheel drive vehicles since 1970, whatever. Best I ever had was an old Jeep with Quadratrac, which, of course, you would not want today. But Quadratrac was a full-time four-wheel drive system, which is insane.
Right.
But it had a limited slip rear diff, a limited slip front, and a limited slip transfer case. So for those of you that wonder when you get stuck, I mean, a lot of times when you get, say you have two-wheel drive, I'll make it basic. You have two-wheel drive and all of a sudden you can't get out of a parking place and you walk out and you're frustrated as hell because the left tire is on bare pavement and it's not doing you any good and the right tire is in the ice and you can't go anywhere, right? That's because most cars have what they call an open differential, which for those of you who have done this your entire life and never really thought about it, both wheels in the back have to be able to go at different speeds, or in the front for that matter, because when you go around a curve, if you didn't, yep, one's going faster than the other, it would start hopping, right? And you could drive like that, but it wouldn't be very pleasant, and your tires wouldn't last very long. So you have what they call an open diff. So Chevy has something called a lacking differential, where they both start out the same speed, but they're both turning, okay? In a minute, there's pressure on one to go faster than the other, it breaks. When I say it breaks that pattern and it allows it to run open. Now, the Fords are different. If one starts to slip in the Ford, a little bit of power gets transferred to the other side. That's what Ford calls that a limited slip. And so if you have that on the rear, I mean, theoretically, if you have four-wheel drive, you could have two tires on ice and two on pavement, and you're still going nowhere. Right. Well, the Jeep had all four wheels, so literally, if you could drive into a snowbank, and if one of the tires was on dry pavement, all you did was push the gas down harder. It would like seek the wheel that was okay, and out you'd pull. But you absolutely would not want that system because it was loud. You didn't get any gas mileage. But even now, I mean, if you're a pickup truck, if you don't get the limited slip or the lacking rear, you're four wheel drive, but you're half what you could be.
Yeah, that's where you know, modern all-wheel drive systems, I think, are
well, depends
really
on,
good because
depends on the system.
They sense the slippage, and adjust the traction to the tire that's actually got traction. So, real quick, trivia question: what was the movie? The guy that won an Oscar. What was the movie where the Oscar-winning character, testifying at trial, had a huge revelation about slip differential?
That would be My Cousin Vinny.
Yes, exactly.
It has
all-time favorite lawyer movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that wasn't called a limited slip back then. It was called Positraction.
Positraction, that's right.
Yeah. So otherwise, I mean, if you had a GTO, whatever those muscle cars were, a 442, if you just burn the thing out, all you did was spin one wheel and you almost wanted to fishtail out. So just for stability and speed, because you essentially caused your own skid then, because the motor was so strong, right? So if you didn't pick up some of the power to the other wheel, you just like almost go in a circle, right?
Right. Well, but in fact, what's the song? It's 409, right, by the Beach Boys? That references the Positraction 409.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. You got to have that.
It's got the lyric in it. I mean, it's hilarious. Well, it's a marker of the kind of culture we're in that even though we still like to talk a lot about cars, this level of discussion about it, if you try to sit down and talk to people now with this level of discussion or a technical expertise about cars, they'll look at you like you got two heads. I think back when I was a kid, if you wanted to be identified as a true American male, you could talk about all this stuff.
Oh, sure.
With respect to cars.
Well, and if you wanted, if you got a Bronco or if you got one of those cars and you kind of maxed it out for off road or whatever, you didn't just have a Ford rear end. You got a Detroit locker. The Detroit lockers were the best, and you always had the you had the worn hubs where you could take the hubs out of four wheel drive if you wanted to. And it's
right.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, I obviously still like that stuff. So, but then that makes me old and unusual, right, or something.
Well, I learned to drive a stick shift on a government, the U.S. government, high clearance four wheel drive pickup truck that actually required when you put it in a four wheel drive, you had to get out and change the hubs.
Well, you know what's interesting, Louis, is everybody, even you, that is still the best system because the entire front end ran free. But right now, if you were to buy a Jeep, okay, and you were to any of those cars, they all sort of a different thing. But the Jeeps, I believe, when you shift it into four-wheel drive, it shifts at the transfer case. But the entire front end is turning the whole rest of the time. Okay, so when you unlock the hubs, which nobody wants to do, I used to give laundry no end of grief. When do I get one of those? And you'll have to get out in the cold weather and unlock the hub. I'm not gonna, whatever. And but the fact is, you don't want anything turning up there. So, and there's nothing wrong if you had the old system and just went out and locked them all the time, which was okay. You could turn the whole front end. That's exactly the same system as you have today. The only difference is you can't unlock it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Now, the Chevys, which I have, it was way over everybody's head here, have a central axle disconnect to where when you put it in four-wheel drive, it creates heat and the axle connects on the front like halfway in the middle. So you're only pushing maybe the outside foot and a half of axle, which you don't want to push that either. Why should you push that and when you don't need the four-wheel drive on? I mean, it's wear and tear, and it's cost you gas mileage. So the best system is the old locking hubs. And if you didn't feel like getting out there, what you could just as easily in November with winter coming on, you can just lock them and leave them locked till March, and you got the same system you do now.
We locked to March, right? It was able to do that.
The only difference is you can't unlock them.
So I'll ask another car question because I'm curious. My son is a little bit younger than Maddie, but he mentioned this the other day. Maddie, how many of your friends know how to drive a stick shift?
I would say less than half.
Okay.
Like I know how to
do it. Probably.
I know how to do it because that's how I was taught. I have a friend that knows how to do it, and just because he's had a bunch of stick shift cars. And, maybe a couple other friends, but definitely the majority of my friends would have no idea.
So that's my impression. I think for my kid was saying that in his circle of people that he runs around with, and these are all, white collar types, he's the only one that knows how to drive one.
Well, Dr. J had a Firebird with the T-tops and the whole bit and the performance thing. I had a GTO that had the Hurst shifter and the Hurst shifter and the something clutch. That thing was spectacular. There was no way you could possibly get in the wrong gear. I mean, it was right into the gear and it hit and you knew you were in. Boy, John's had that Trans Am and it was maybe an 80 something, 79 or something. You were hunting and pecking for those gears. It's a good thing that thing had power because you'd try and go from second to third and you're all over the darn place. I never drove anything that didn't have synchro mesh, and I never drove a three on the tree. But some of the older ones were not. The old pickup transmissions were not synchro mesh in the first gear. You had to be dead stop to get it in there. I mean, you couldn't. It was real tough to work that first and second gear. That's why nobody ever used the first gear. I think, in those things. But don't a lot of trucks, you had old trucks, you had a double clutch? I never had to do that.
Yeah, no, I learned, like I said, I learned on a government vehicle that didn't have synchromesh or barely anything else. And you know, once you learn on something like that, the synchromesh suddenly looks good. I don't know if I'd be very good on a shifting on the steering column. Most of my stick shift cars were stick shift on the floor.
Yeah, me too.
Driving the tree on the steering column might give me some trouble.
I'll tell you the best real quick. Well, I had an 89 Toyota 4-cylinder pickup. Lou, the thing was spectacular. Well, you put your index finger on it, and that's what you needed to shift. I mean, it never missed a gear. Matty, synchromesh means that you can go back and forth in gears without clutching. You had a clutch, but they would slide in. You'd have to come to a complete stop to get into first gear. I mean, you could slide into first when you're going 3 miles an hour, and you had no problem going from fourth to third or third to second. And I think, didn't they start out, Lou, when the synchromesh was between third and second and fourth or third? It wasn't always every gear, was it?
I don't recall.
Oh, that was before us.
I only drove on, once I had owned an actual car with a stick shift. All my gears were synchromesh.
Well, the GTO, the thing had so much power and the ratio was so low, it really needed a fifth gear. And if you were in fourth gear, you could race that thing up to 85, 90 miles an hour. And the minute you took your foot off the gas, it would like you put the brake on. So actually, if you wanted to shoot out, not that I ever did, as fast as you could to 60 miles an hour, you didn't even use first gear. You just put it in second and went. You never had to use first. Anywho, hey,
I recall that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, well, matter of fact, most trucks, the first gear is designed to pull a load of cows uphill. I mean, if you go to the original, like Ford and Chevy transmissions in like a 65 truck, it was a 4-speed. You never used first. I mean, you could own the truck for 20 years and never use first, unless you were, say, pulling out of a pulling a house out of mud or something
big.
All right, Lou, what's going on in the world, buddy?
So I'm sort of kind of torn about a couple of different subjects, but I'm just going to ask you guys: have you looked at any of the Biden press appearances? The very limited, I mean, he hasn't held a press conference, but the very limited stuff that he's done over the last couple of days.
You couldn't comment yesterday, Lou. He was out there for maybe 100 words in a minute and a half, and they didn't wheel him off, but they took him off. He said no questions and wandered off.
Right,
very strange.
Did you watch the Pentagon ceremony where with the SecDef and the
I did not
the, two female generals, women generals that he was promoting to 4-star?
I did not.
It's okay. So I saw that one yesterday, and then I saw the Pentagon performance or part of the Pentagon performance the other day. I mean, I'm not gonna hang the guy for occasionally forgetting a name, because I certainly do that. But he forgot the name of the Secretary of Defense, the guy who had just spoken and who he was with, presumably, for a few minutes up until the time the camera started rolling. He forgets the name of the Secretary of Defense, and he forgets the name of the Pentagon. He calls it that outfit over there. But
that sounds like something I do.
But I'm not going to hang him for that. That happens. Much more disturbing for me was the way he looked and the way he acted, and I hesitate to use the word doddering, but that's very much what it looked like. He kind of wanders when he steps away from the podium. It's clear he has no idea where he's going. He kind of wanders in the direction of these two women, and then kind of stops and looks around like, what am I doing here? Where am I? And I mean, I'm astounded at what he looks like and how bad it is. And of course, we're what, 48, 49 days in, no press conference yet.
I don't think,
this is only going to get worse.
Lou, the right winger,
he's capable of handling one.
How can I put this? The right wingers had that in there as a seriously campaign thing, but then, Trump's about as bad, but in a different way, And it seemed to me that he got a lot better, and I thought that they were just chipping at him. And all of a sudden, the last 2-3 weeks, I think it's almost worse than they ever said it was. And I'm trying to be, I hope it's just, you know, something, you know, maybe something he caught or whatever. To me, yesterday I was astounded at how quick that was. And that there was no, I mean, why?
I wasn't because I had read during the campaign a couple of pieces that were, and again, you don't know, but these sounded right. A couple of pieces from his campaign staff, or people that had been close to him on the campaign, anonymous, of course, who said, look, here's what's going on with this guy. You know, he is in advanced stages, or getting to an advanced stage of dementia. He is not able to function at full speed all the time. He's not able to function at even half speed most of the time. He has good days and bad days, and they pump him up full of drugs to such an extent that they are the prescriptions were being purchased under the names of various staff members, so that it would be impossible for the press to go back and, you know, track a pharmacy where this medicine was being ordered for the president. This was all in the public record. It was, of course, suppressed as part of the election rigging that was going on, but it was there. The really interesting thing from my perspective was that he was able to perform at least moderately well at the debates. You could see him fade toward the end, and I think, you know, I think right now they're just trying to, you know, prop him up. Wheel him out is not a bad.
Well, look, the guy's metaphor. He's not that old. He looks in pretty good shape.
78.
But I'm saying he looks in pretty good shape. I can understand. I'm forgetting names of people that I knew on the trading floor, but it was also 20 years ago. I mean, how many of those can I keep in the computer? You wonder if you're going or you're just trying to process too much stuff. You know, I think everybody goes through that, even people that are younger.
Well, like I said, I'm not going to hang the guy at his age for forgetting a name or two. It's a dramatic, of course, contrast with Trump, who you know was at hot max energy level pretty much all the time he was out there. But I'm not going to hang the guy for forgetting a name or two or having a brain lock in the middle of a discussion. I'm much more concerned about watching what's happening to him afterwards and what appears to be his kind of default position after he steps away from the podium. And you know, this goes back to that discussion we had a couple of weeks ago about the effort by the Democrats to try to cut off the president's ability to order or rapidly respond with a nuclear weapons order. And the idea that, okay, the people in charge up there, or the people in power at the top of the food chain, Pelosi, Schumer, they know that this guy, they should, in normal circumstances, they'd be in front of the president, you know, every day for an hour or two, plotting strategy, talking over what they were going to do. They're working the legislative agenda, working the phones. I think they're not, I don't think that's happening. I think they've got limited audiences with him, and I think those limited audiences scare the living daylights out of him. I think that's why you're seeing this move to try to put some kind of coalition together that's actually going to be involved in a first use or a response decision for nukes, which is frankly a disaster in terms of our strategic deterrent capability. But this is precisely what people were saying during the campaign.
Well, wasn't there always a you know, there's all kinds of committees, but wasn't there always a double secret, you know, favorite college committee that, what's the committee that does the, you know, the Armed Services Committee, you know, they go through the tank contracts, right? But there's also a committee that if you're going to go take out Osama bin Laden, there's people you're supposed to tell first, right? And it's like, is it like eight or six or seven people from both sides of the aisle or what?
There is a national security hierarchy that is supposedly consulted on certain issues. They were not consulted, for example, on the Libya bombing. That was done when we attacked Libya, which was one of the major illegal acts of the Obama administration. When we attacked Libya, that was done on Obama's own discretion, and maybe talking to a couple of people on his staff. There was no congressional involvement in that whatsoever. Typically, there is. You're right. But what I'm talking about is a decision to respond with nuclear weapons in a hurry, if you have to. I would. It's inconceivable to me that you would have a situation where any president would pick the phone up, would be able to pick the phone up, call the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and say, "I want you to launch, you know, our nuclear missiles in Montana and Wyoming and North and South Dakota. I want you to fire those." Now, we're going to do a first strike on so-and-so, and we're going to launch those missiles. I don't think that could happen. On the other hand, we've got an emergency going on. We've got a nuclear strike that's been initiated against our carrier forces, let's say. This is a scenario that got kicked around a lot. And a nuclear strike on a carrier battle group in the South China Sea. The Chinese are going to take Taiwan. They put a nuke down on a carrier as a pure military target, you know, and the president says we need to respond right away. Under those circumstances, you want the ability. You don't necessarily have to exercise it, but you want the ability of the president to pick the phone up and say, okay, this is retaliatory strike. We're going to do this.
All right. So, well, let's talk about this after the break, but I'm going to say once in 48 centuries, would you not have the 10 minutes to call up three other people and say, Is this a sound decision? You're right, you'd want the capability to not to, but boy, if it was me, I'd always want three or four people to bounce something off.
No. I agree. But when the longer you force that decision chain out, the less credible your deterrence
is. I agree. All right, let's talk about it after break. S&P futures up 26, NASDAQ futures up 215. We're putting a whip to it early. Right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures up 213. So it looks like we've got a positive day again. I don't really have hardly anything. The only thing I have on my screen that's down is Goldman Sachs, but it's been up a bunch lately, so it's only down $3. So virtually every stock that is alive this early in the morning, and the transportation average is up. Transportation average has been up huge lately, and everything in the Dow except for a couple. Coke's down 8 cents. A couple other things down a little bit, but nothing major. Like I said, over in Europe, we've got DAX actually down 13 points, 0.1%. FTSE down 18.3%. CAC around up 9.2. So Europe very quiet, actually, the downside of here. Nikkei up 175.6%. Shanghai up 79. That's 2.3%. This is after being down heavy 2 days in a row. Same way with the Hang Seng. These guys are really flying up and down, the Shanghai and the Hang Seng. Up 478, 1.6. I mean, their volatility on a daily basis is massive. Yesterday, the Dow was up 4. This is a wild day yesterday. Dow was down up 464. That's 1.5% to a record high. S&P up 23. NASDAQ, which was down all day, finished down 5 points. It actually was down more than that most of the day. So, strange goings down there. Bonds, 1.50, down 1 basis point. The Bund, minus 0.32. It's down 1 basis point. The Japan, also down 1 basis point at 0.11. Oil, up 75 cents, 65.13. Brent up 83 cents, 68.73. Natural gas up a penny, 2 cents. Natural gas, I think, is kind of toast here for a while because things are getting milder all over the place. RBOB, however, 209. Gas is up. It's got to be up 30% at the pump in the last 4 weeks. I don't know where it is in Colorado. We will ask Lou when he gets back in. Gold up 810, 1729, so pretty securely back in the 1700s, but still at the lower end of any kind of range, nowhere near 1850, which was the high end. Silver up 16 cents, 26.29. Copper up 8 cents, 4.11 on copper. That, you'd never have thought the buy of the year would have been copper, for God's sake, but it certainly is. And we got to do our crypto here. Down $315, but still 56,037. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Put a fork in the Irish.
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Very quiet so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside expressway is looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Only crash in the area is on the eastbound side of 47th Street, right at Harlem. There is a crash with the tow on the scene. But everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, another mild day, a bit colder than it was the last couple of days, but still very nice, as we'll be sunny with a high of 55. Right now it is mostly clear and 54 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 66 today. Right now it's clear and 49. That's right, it's actually warmer here than in Phoenix right now. In sports, the Bulls return to action tonight after the All-Star break. They'll host the 76ers at 7 p.m. Central Time. Bulls are 16-18, tied for 8th in the Eastern Conference, so they're right in the thick of the playoff race for the first time in several years. Suns are back in action as well. They're at Portland tonight. That's a 7 p.m. Arizona Time tip. Blackhawks will play this evening too, as they're back in Dallas tonight after they were blown out the other night there. That's a 7:30 p.m. puck drop, Blackhawks versus Stars. College hoops, the conference tournaments are well underway this week, and DePaul with an upset over Providence yesterday at the Garden, 70-62. So they'll advance to the quarterfinal and take on UConn tonight at 8 p.m. DePaul had a miserable season, but played well last night. We'll see if they can keep it going. Notre Dame's miserable season came to an end. They were absolutely demolished in the second half by North Carolina, losing 101-59 in the second round. And Northwestern, they had a terrible season as well. They lost in the first round of the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis, falling to Minnesota 51-46. Chief.
Many of you have been to the Garden?
I have not. I've been outside of it, but I've never been to a game
there. It's neat. You know, It's even neater when you see the game end and 20,000 people disappear in like 10 minutes because they all head down to the trains and they're gone.
Yeah.
Contrast that with the United Center where the rapid transit runs through the parking lot and they don't have a station there because the guys that run the parking lots would be pissed off. Sort of different. Just saying. Lou, you've touched on a theme that I've had the last week or so, and Maddie's probably getting tired of it or whatever, but it has to do with people who go to Congress, because the guy that got me started on this was Carl. I blame Carl. One of his buddies, he helped get elected to Congress, and after 2 years, the guy wanted out so bad, he had no interest in running again. Said it was an absolute set, but I've thought that a lot of good people go to Congress, and then somewhere along the line there, 2, 3, 4 terms, you either sell out to somebody, and then you become part of whatever it is for the next 40 years, the people nobody likes, or you quit. And I get the feeling, you know, and I don't want to, you know, it's a feeling, right? But, you know, hey, you know, I'm a son of an Irish cop in the South Side. These feelings aren't so bad sometimes. The people who run the government are not the people that are there, in my opinion. They may make the move tomorrow, but they're controlled by somebody. The Denny Hastert situation absolutely put an exclamation point on that. You know, people knew of his history, and somebody controlled him. I mean, he got that job when anybody else could have, but they didn't, you know, type of thing. Well,
what I found remarkable about Hastert, and the story I try to tell my friends out here to describe the Chicago political system or the Illinois political system, was that, you know, that situation where Hastert was lobbying for the removal of the Republican U.S. attorney in Chicago because he was damaging the dailies and the daily organization at the time. And you know, who of course were solid Democrats. And I tried to explain to him, you know, again, and as you and I have said many times, there's no Republicans or Democrats in Illinois. There's only me or us and you.
Yeah, emperors. They're emperors.
Yeah, and that drove that home. So your comment about Hastert, I think is absolutely correct. I think it's correct about Pelosi and a number of the other people.
Well, here's my question for you, Lou. It's going to take me a while to get there. Sorry about that. But when I still have, and I got to bring it in so I can use it for a reference. The preamble to the making of the president, whatever year Bush and Gore ran, I forget the year. No, I'm doddering. Whatever year that was, it basically said that the old Republican Party, the Bushies, the neocons or whatever you want to call them, couldn't stand the Clinton situation. They were going to change it. So a guy who just died like 2 weeks ago, George Shultz, essentially had a weekend meeting where they interviewed people, and they got to George Bush, and they essentially picked him. So the Republican Party, the people behind the scenes, picked George Bush. Okay, and they were all the people that, if you looked at the pictures a few years before, what's that? The stupid party they run out in the Sierra Nevadas every year for the deepest, darkest heads of what used to be the Republican Party. I don't know who the hell they are now. Where Reagan, 1 year with Reagan, Nixon, all those guys all sitting in one picture. Remember that? What's it? Sequoia Club? What's the name of the place? Is it the Sequoia Club or something?
I think I understand, but I don't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you were willing to read between the lines and look around, you could find out, you know, going back to the Cabots and the Lodges, you may not like them. And a lot of these people, you know, they were pompous asses in my mind. But at least you could piece together who the power was behind the Republican Party. Like I said, you may like it, you may not like it, but they were pretty much old white guys, you know, that had families, that had a lot of money. But I'll give them this: they were Americans. You didn't see George Shultz on his 95th birthday, you know, leaving to Monte Carlo and living there. I mean, didn't make him a perfect guy at all, but I didn't like any of these guys. I didn't like the neocons. But what I'm saying is, I'm trying to be fair, that you at least knew who they were. You knew they were pulling the strings, which you didn't like, but you could sort of identify them. I have no idea who's pulling the strings behind this Democratic Party right now, and it really scares the bejesus out of me, even though I've been a Democrat my whole life.
That was my question, because you saw, obviously, there was a major string pulling in the spring of of 2020 when it looked like Bernie Sanders might, you know, might get enough delegates.
Yeah.
And so the powers that be, whoever they are, the Clintons, the Obamas, whoever the kingmakers are, got together and said, we're throwing all our support. We're going to sabotage Sanders' campaign, and we're throwing all of our support behind, behind Uncle Joe to try to get, get a candidate that we can, A, put some, have some confidence the voters will like, and B, who's basically controllable. I think the much more interesting discussion is who picked Kamala Harris or Kamala Harris.
I'm never
going to get her name right. Kamala Harris. Who picked her?
I was just going to. You got in ahead of me as a good co-host does. I don't know. So I'm saying I can't figure out who's where and what the agenda is. I mean, the Democratic Party at all times since Roosevelt was in charge. Talk about a party that. On one half, you had union people from the North, and on the other half, you had a bunch of bigoted Southern Democrats on the other half. Now, that was one hell of a group trying to get together in the same room, right? Which, and somehow Roosevelt, but it's always been this kind of disperse sort of things, but the unions had their power. Now they have none, basically, unless you're talking about a city employers union, which I don't think their power extends to Washington that much. Maybe it does.
I do.
But not like
you read that, Chief. If you read that time piece about the way the election was sculpted and orchestrated by on the anti-Trump by the anti-Trump people, you see the union influence.
Okay,
but it's public. You're right. It's public employee union.
But the middle class, and even though the middle class doesn't refuse to admit it for some reason, and I don't quite know why. I mean, there's people that I know that are middle class union sort of kind of people, if there still were unions around. Whether they did it on purpose or not, the middle class's voice in Washington were always the unions. I'm not saying that they liked each other, that they should have been in bed together. They just had the agenda kind of ran close to each other, right? I mean, if you screw a union guy, you pretty much screwed somebody.
I think the unions were always out for the unions.
Okay, but I'm saying, I didn't say that they did it on purpose. What I said was they just happened to have, most of the agenda was the same. I mean, if the union wanted the 401ks, the pensions, those kinds of things, most of the people in the middle class had stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
I understand, okay. I don't necessarily agree, but let's run with that.
Okay. Let's put it this way. It wasn't perfect, but now they got nobody, is my point. I mean, so where I'm going with this...
Well, yeah, the irony that the Republican Party, and let's make sure we understand what we're talking about here. In 2020, Donald Trump brought together a wider, more diverse Republican electorate than we've ever seen before.
His electorate was people who felt they got screwed by the last five presidents. That was his group.
That's right. And that's so we literally find Trump and the Republicans as the party of the middle class and the working, the quote unquote working man and woman in the country. And I find that remarkable. It's a remarkable change out. While the Democratic, I think the people that are behind the Democratic power structure right now are the extremely wealthy Silicon Valley industrialists and the what I call the media elite, although John McWhorter calls them the elect, the media elite and elect in our east and west coasts.
Frankly, if that's the case,
the power structure is, and that's what's driving this very far left agenda that I think we're seeing coming out of the Biden people right out of the gate here.
But it's sort of not the same though. I mean, the Schultz group, they had been involved for 50 years. I mean, they had done public service. I mean, even if you didn't like the guys, this new group, I almost liked the old group better, to be honest with you. I mean, even though they had their flaws and I could disagree with half the stuff or three quarters of the stuff they did, certainly all the crap in Iraq and all that stuff, the Rummy and the Cheneys and those guys. But I trust those guys more than I trust this new group. I mean, at least as much. I mean,
there's a choice between those guys for you to think about. I look at the new group. I look at this group of the elite again, McWhorter calls them the elect because he's trying not to be disparaging. I call these people the elite. If you look at this group of elite, they suffer from, I think, the same problem that a lot of my former clients who were extremely wealthy or extremely successful in business suffered from, and that is the arrogance of, you know, economic success. And the idea that because we've made a lot of money, we are smarter and more thoughtful and, yes, I'll say it, more moral than the vast majority of the unwashed American public. And so it's, you know, I don't think there's any question that a lot of these guys see themselves as, you know, philosopher kings who ought to be out, to use Plato's term, who ought to be out there, you know, making policy for everybody else. And they're doing it because we know what's better. Now, I'm not going to say that there were not guys like that on the other side.
Oh, sure.
The right. In fact, I think there were. But what you're seeing right now is a real kind of ideologically consistent, conformist mentality among this very elite group of people who have got their hooks in because of the money, have got their hooks into the Democratic leadership, and are driving this train right now.
Well, Lou,
I think that's what you're saying.
But it's a debate. Even Matt, he can certainly pile in here.
These are people. Let me just rephrase it. These are guys who are they're part of this global elite that you and I have talked about that owes not a particularly strong allegiance to the United States.
That's my concern with them. I was going to say, again, you're canceling Trump here this morning, which is the mark of a good co-host. If you read stuff even back in the 40s and 50s, or even the 20s for that matter, the families, you know, and of course I was never one of them, nobody here was, the families that had been rich like for generations, in their mind at least, they did something good for society, I said in their mind at least.
The concept of noblesse oblige.
Yeah,
that transferred from Great Britain and other places, but mainly from Great Britain. That's transferred directly from Great Britain to the United States aristocracy.
Well, and there was always a tension between those kinds of people, which again, I don't even it'd be hard for me to even understand to live in a place like that, but in the quote nouveau riche. That the nouveau, wasn't that the term? It was some guy invented, you know, the hula hoop, and all of a sudden he's rich and thinks he belongs in, you know, Butler National Golf Course. And the people at Butler are going, I don't care. You can't string two words together and you talk like this chief guy. We don't want you in here. You know, so there's always been that tension, right? You know what's, and it's,
correct.
And talk about being I'm not an intellectual snob because all I do is every day is realize all the stuff I don't know. Why didn't I get along the market last night? I mean, if you're a trader, it's very hard to have this huge ego that you're always right because every day, you're wrong a bunch of spots, Lou. So you just don't get the ego, even though it may sound like I do. I don't. One of the things about the COVID is CNBC has a lot of these guys on there, you know, big restaurateurs and big this and big guys who got all this new, you know, even guys like Mark Cuban, who I, you know, I pretty much like the guy. He's been on the show once or twice, I think, when Dr. J was here. I have nothing bad to say about the guy, but it's amazing when they're on for like a half hour, you realize why they used to keep people on only 10 minutes and be off. When you start wandering onto any topic, there aren't very many guys like Lou Michaels, like Jeff Joseph, like Kevin O'Neill, that you can shift topics on, and all of a sudden, they know enough. They know something about the next topic. I mean, you could just tell they wander off on a subject, and all of a sudden these guys. I mean, you don't start. Who's the guy who owns all the restaurants? And he owns not the Mavericks, the other team.
He owns the Rockets.
No, what's his name? The guy with the crew cut. What the hell's his name? He owns all the restaurants too. He's got the kind of weird name. You know, but they wander off, and all of a sudden
his name is Tillman Fertitta.
Yeah, I'll never remember that. I think the guy's drop dead brilliant in his industries, and all of a sudden they'll start wandering off into like, you know, money supply and Fed policy, and you can just see he just draws a blank, you know, which is fine. I'd rather be as good as he is in the restaurants and have all that money on a basketball team. But you can just tell, Lou, that there isn't the depth in a lot of, and I'm not so sure I want the people in California that just happen to get the best widget running the country. They don't have that. I don't know where they went to school. I don't know what their family was like. I don't know what their background was. I mean, you know, I'm not so sure I want those to be the insiders. At least,
well, let's take an example. Okay, so Greta Thunberg, you know, suddenly becomes this. I refer to her as a mentally ill teenager. That's my opinion, obviously, but you know, Greta Thunberg, who suddenly becomes the darling of the media elite and the East Coast and West Coast elites for her, you know, talking about global warming. Okay, and she rolls right into this. Suddenly she's everywhere, and you ask yourself, why is this kid up here, and why is she the face of this? Because what she's saying is actually stupid, but she matches up on this agenda that people like Gates and a number of other folks have, and so she's a convenient prop. Now, it turns out, at least according to what I just read, 2 days ago, she's been having a very interesting correspondence with the Unabomber. She's been writing letters. They've been exchanging mail.
My neighbor.
Back and forth. And
my neighbor.
Maybe Maddie could find that story. You know, discussing his philosophy and how she's fascinated by it and, you know, maybe wants to put it into effect. And I'm thinking, this is exactly what I would have expected from somebody with this kind, you know, this emotional level of emotional maturity and these kinds of you know, mental and psychiatric issues. So why should we be surprised at this? And yet, this is the person who gets picked as the face of this movement by people who are enamored of the idea of climate change activism, but really don't have a real good understanding about, you know, energy cycle and, you know, how much power we're actually using and, you know, the cost of switching over or just shutting the stuff down. So that's a specific example of people wandering off the reservation, but that's the intellectual reservation of their own expertise. But that's what's happening, Chief.
Well, two things are happening here.
These positions.
A lot of two things.
They get enamored. They get enamored of something and they run with it.
Oh, it becomes a phobia. It becomes an absolute phobia. But we have to be careful here in two spots. One is, one of my buddies who's one of the smartest men I've ever...
Not the Unabomber.
No, actually, the Unabomber's my neighbor. You know what, Lou? I'll tell you what. I'll save my other story for next week, but the Unabomber grew up two blocks from where I lived. And he...
This explains much.
It explains much. I moved there when I was in high school, so... And he's a little older than me. Somehow or another, I mean, I lived in Evergreen Park, and Evergreen Park Community High School was a nice community high school. They weren't New Trier, but they were there. I used to go there in the summer for like phys ed stuff and everything and learn how to, that's where I learned how to wrestle a little bit. And you did stuff there in the summer, basketball. It was better than just, you know, in the morning I'd go there and in the afternoon I'd play with my buddies, you know, type of thing. And, but the Unabomber went to Evergreen Park High School and I don't even know, I mean, Marist, when I was there, didn't have a calculus class in honors till like the year after I left. Somehow the Unabomber went to Evergreen Park High School and was a math genius by the time he was 16. How the hell they even recognized that at Evergreen Park High School, I have no idea. So the guy went to Harvard at age 16 out of Evergreen Park, out of a frame house, and he's 89th in Utica he lived, or one of those streets over there. And in Harvard, the idiots, and I absolutely say that, put him in some sort of an experimental... Because coming on with this was the same time as like LSD was invented or discovered, whatever you want to say about it. They put him at age 16 in this experimental mind-expanding drug thing with other kids that were 18, 19. Well, I think from what I read, the 18, 19 kids got out of it, I'll use the term alive, but it really messed him up. And he ended up leaving Harvard and God knows what he did afterward. But he is probably one of the most brilliant person to ever come out of the community that I grew up in. And he went to Harvard. Why Harvard was never sued by his parents, I have no, it was a different time of era, blue collar people didn't sue people. How that school didn't lose every nickel for what they did to that kid, I have no idea. So he ends up becoming
the
university.
You can look at the, you know, what Harvard's doing right now with respect to some of its programs, and they should be getting sued. By the way, Maddie, if you can find it, the Capitol Steps did a song about the Unabomber that is, it's awful, but it's very funny.
And he became one of these guys that the people you're talking about, Lou, the people who ended up being, they're running these companies, you know, it's not like Edison was the head of Commonwealth Edison, hence the name, when the guy had 150 patents or however many he had. We're talking about people running these companies now. They just land there. They're part of this management class that appear to be somewhat immoral sometimes, some of the guys, not everybody. And they have nothing to do with the drugs they sell. They didn't invent any of them. They're not even a freaking doctor. They're not a chemist. They're just there. And they think somehow or another they were born on third and felt they hit a home run or a triple type of,
but that's, again, all our political parties care about right now, and this is why I think these folks have such influence with the Democrats, is the money. I mean, the money distorts all of this and gives these people an outsized impact on areas that where they I think they have virtually little to no expertise.
Well, but Unabomber basically did I'm not making the guy a saint, he wasn't. But I mean, I think he was a very troubled soul who I would love to spend an hour talking to, and I'd bring you with me, Lou. It would be a fascinating hour. But I mean, what he tried to do is identify these people, essentially blow them up. I mean, right? It was his own revolution, which we don't necessarily like.
Much like Ms. Thurnberg, he's a misanthropic, anti-person, anti-technology kind of. I mean, that's where his mind is going now.
Yeah.
And he said to himself, "I'm single-handedly going to stop this, and I'm going to do it by, you know, by damaging the people who are actually promoting this thing that I'm afraid of."
Well, I mean, if we continue, Lou, and I think you and I, let's just hope we're long gone. If we continue what we're doing with the constant, not only the one percenters make all the money, have all the assets, and now they're going to tell us how to live, I have a feeling that somewhere, someday, they're going to be recruiting Unabombers and want to know where the bomb makers are. And I hope I never see that in this country. But that's where we're headed. I honestly believe that. Nobody thinks you can change stuff here in a ballot box anymore. Who does?
Well, if you go back to that Time magazine article, you'll see why and how that was orchestrated. But I think there's there will be a lot of frustration building up, at which point the elites will simply retreat to whatever country gives them cover, and set themselves up there and look from afar at the damage that they've wrought and say, geez, I wonder how that happened.
Well, look at this, even this $1 trillion plan. People, Lou, that I never dreamed would even look at stuff like this. I had a couple of people last night say to me, let me get this straight. I'm getting $1,000 roughly, and the tax bill on me going forward on this thing is going to be six. Where's the other five? Who's getting it?
Yes.
All right, Lou, we got
to
go.
Or they're finally starting to put information out about, you know, Nancy Pelosi's district getting $650 million, writing off their budget deficit with a flood of federal money. How much is Illinois getting?
I'm sure a lot, but not enough. Whatever it is, it's not enough. SP Futures up 30, NASDAQ Futures up 254. Thank you, Lou. We'll be back, Mr. Dan Janinas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Blowing up at Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 29. NASDAQ futures up 255. So we've got we got some stuff that Oracle's down 365. They had earnings last night. We had AMC had earnings, and they actually were to the upside here a little bit. They're up, well, not a little bit, up 72 cents to 10.58, which is somewhat interesting. And when Dan comes on, we'll talk to him about it. Somebody came on CNBC last night, and I was doing a client call, but I was hearing bits and pieces of it. The guy basically said he thought the stock was worth a penny. That's not even a dollar, but a penny. I mean, even if I didn't like the place, I might have said a dollar. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I have questions for you, though.
Okay, sure.
You're the man. I don't know if you happened to be watching CNBC last night, because I was half-assed watching it while I was talking to a client and just kind of watching the bottom line. These companies, and I don't think you've mentioned any of them yet. Well, how do you even know whether you have or you haven't? And I'm looking at this AMC, all right, and the dude comes in from AMC, the head of AMC, and says in most places now they're reopening with, you know, various kinds of numbers of crowds, and he's claiming there's good movies. I don't know about that. Then you hear Disney talking about they're never going to put first-run stuff maybe through movies again. They're always going to use their own system now, and that's why the Disney stocks are going, whatever. And I lumped these guys together, and all of a sudden they came out with these earnings. Now, I didn't even look because I was busy. But the stock's up. Some dude comes on CNBC, and he goes, I think the stock's worth like a penny, like not even a dollar, but a penny. And I just wonder, I think what you're doing, you kind of stay away from that, and so do I, except I have clients that are in all these stocks these days. I cannot fathom how I could possibly figure out, because I don't have the time or the connections you do to actually go sit with these people. I have no, first of all, in any stretch of my experience of numbers, which has been a little bit, how these people are not stone cold broke, I have no idea. But there's some combination of being able to borrow from people at ridiculously low rates given the risk and government money. Somehow all these places are afloat. The cruise lines, the airlines, even these guys. Some combination. How do you, I have no idea how to start working through that as to whether it's enough, not enough. Do they really owe? What if the interest rates go up? Do their rates go up? Are they locked in? And how do you even begin? If the young Dan, when you were the eager guy, 20, not that you're not anymore, but all of a sudden your boss says to you, go analyze these guys. How the hell would you even start, Dan?
I would probably, and that's with the example of AMC, I probably wouldn't start. That's an industry that we've tended to stay away from over the years. Years ago, I remember I had an analyst who wanted to follow a company called Carmike, which were were theaters, movie theaters in rural areas, and the concept made a lot of sense. But I didn't like the margins. There were too many other, you know, operational issues that were concerns, you know, what movies they get and that sort of thing. And so the, you know, that particular example, I saw that as well. And yeah, there's better places to put your money. That's what I would say. There's definitely better places to put your money. Some of it is also, you know, we all like going to the movie theater, but a lot of us have gotten used to Netflix and you know, a lot of the movie channels. And there's been this, even in the last year, there's been this emergence of a competing, you know, technology, you know, having friends over to watch them, you know, a show or a game or a movie. And I think that trend is more likely to continue. I mean, while I think the theaters will still get new releases, it's going to be hard from here. And as you're saying, like, the question is, from here going forward, how do they get financing? I don't think it would be, this is a good time. I really don't think it's a good time. Rates are likely going higher. They're not going to get a lot of support from the investment community as a whole, because although people are looking outside of, they're sort of looking back now at some of these, names that got hit during the pandemic. Some of them, frankly, aren't going to come back as strongly. And I think theaters is one group that won't come back as strictly. I was actually looking this morning at, you know, REITs and real estate as well. And, you know, we have self-storage, which I like, SELF, Global Self Storage. And that's doing great, you know, and it pays a nice fat dividend. But the other parts of the commercial real estate sector are going to be slow to come back, and I'm not sure I'd really be putting my money there. So I guess to answer your question, I think there are better opportunities elsewhere.
Well, here's the trick bag, Dan, and with my angle here, and I'm going to ask you, point blank, because obviously I recommend you to people. If I had my druthers, as you know, I do the Protected Index program. Every single client would walk in with a check or a wire of money, and we would select, you know, which indices we wanted to be in. You know, it used to be there only was the spider, so there was only one decision. Then there was a spider and a Q's, and there was a lot of them. So that's part of the decision. Then you figure out how much you want to be protected, and then you figure out how aggressive do you want to be with the calls. Do you want to sell them? Do you want to double up on the upside? Do you want to be? There's all kinds of things to do, but I wish it was that clean. I mean, I would never be in AMC, okay? Actually, but now I got some positions there because of the volatility. That's another story. But I find that I don't get to do that. That all of a sudden, especially with the places I do the sub work for and still talk to the clients there, they walk in with this stuff in their portfolio. And now all of a sudden I'm sort of forced to deal with it. Now, I mean, I'm going to ask you, if they answer, but when I know that you manage fixed income and you do the stuff with the preferreds, and I'm very jealous of the knowledge in there because I don't have it. But what do you do if a guy walks in with a portfolio? You don't tell him to go somewhere else. Obviously, you'll manage what he has, and then there's all stuff in there. You look at it and you go, I'd never buy this one or this one. But you end up being a nursemaid to those things somehow, don't you? I do, unfortunately.
Well, what I do is we look at every position that comes in, and then look at it as, would you buy it today going forward? You know, would you own it today going forward? It may have been a good investment, or it might make sense theoretically to be involved in some, say, cruise lines or that are likely to come back. But, you know, and it also doesn't really make sense for that particular client's level of risk tolerance. We sell. In fact, sometimes we ask them to sell before they transfer money over if it's an area that we don't think is going to be, or there are names in there that we just don't think are going to be good fits. We seem to have good liquidity with Interactive, so we don't have any problems selling things. But, I also want to own things that I know.
Yeah.
I never own a security. I never own a company, a stock, a bond of a company that I really don't know very, very well, and I don't have some contact with management. So that's the first thing, is getting up to speed on those names. And then the second thing is dumping them or selling them or trimming them if they don't make sense for that particular client. They may have just gotten in there. They may have been legacy positions. You know, obviously looking to see whether they're, you know, if it's taxable versus a, you know, an IRA. It's a taxable account. You just, you know, how much have they made, or maybe it makes sense to lighten up and have a loss on hand to offset some of your gains later in the year. So, but those names, I would generally sell or lighten up, at least if it's not an area that I'm, you know, but it doesn't mean that we wouldn't do the homework and get up to speed and say, hey, this might be a name, you know, to buy across the board. But in most cases, like in the situation you're in, I would sell. I would be out of it.
Well, here's one of the issues, and everybody knows I'm pretty much an open book, not with people's accounts, but is one of the biggest holdings of the places that I, not here at PTI, one of the biggest holdings is Apple. And I'll tell you what, the natives are restless with Apple being down $25-$30.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, you can't sell anybody's Apple. I mean, they want their kids to have that stock. Yeah, when it's down, they're like, hey, what the hell's the matter with my account? I'm like, what do you mean? The only thing down is your stock. Yeah, but what do you mean? The account's down. Everything we never really want to have this conversation. But you say, well, everything you've asked us to do, we're doing fine, but your Apple's down and you got 5,000 shares of Apple, it's down $25. Well, yeah. That's what I mean. Well, do you want me to sell it? Oh, God, no, I never want to sell my Apple. I mean, do you ever run into that?
Yeah, and I think, yes. There's, from time to time, I think there are people who are, you know, that are closely tied. I mean, if it's a company that they've worked for, that they've had some involvement with, that's one situation. What I usually do is say, in those situations, keep that in a separate account.
Yeah.
You know, or
yeah.
If you want to, quote, gamble, as they sometimes use the word. I don't like to use the word. I don't even like to use the word bet in our business because we're doing our homework, so we're not betting. We're making educated decisions for investments. So, but if that is a hobby that a client has, I let them continue to explore that hobby and with their own separate account so they can feel comfortable still owning their Apple. And, you know, they can ask questions, and we're here as a resource, but we may not be, you know, we're our objective is to provide them strong risk-adjusted returns. And if that's not part of the, you know, of their plan, then I would tell them to continue to manage that in their own separate account if that's what they've been doing.
Well, I'm with you, buddy.
If they transfer it over to you, I would probably talk to them about lightening up the position for diversification purposes. You know, if it's traded now, maybe there is a little bit of upside still.
But I'm with you, and I mean, some of the stuff I do, I mean, I got involved in, you know, AMC only because the volatility was to the moon. I put a real cheap butterfly on, you know, type of thing.
Right, that's right.
You know,
exactly.
So I made small, you know, and I was happy about it because when you go into something like that. But you know what? The clients I'm talking to and potential ones, Dan, they're all over this stuff.
Right.
I mean, yesterday the people, I was on a conference call, and the conversation was a half hour about Teladoc. Meanwhile, I'm looking up the fundamentals in the thing. The thing made it to 300 hours, or their revenue per share is like 18, and they've never made a dime. And I'm sitting there going, I'd never be in this. I'm like you in this regard. I wouldn't even look twice at this thing, and yet all the action is in these stocks. You and I can talk about, you know, 3M. We can always talk about Apple because everybody owns that one. But we can talk about all these other companies. Nobody even knows what the hell we're talking about. The action is in all these things. We don't know what they are. It's an odd world. It reminds me so much of 1999. Doesn't it, or is that a scary thing to say?
No, it does. It's you know, what's hot today, and people that fear of missing out, and people want to be involved in the sectors, and the little bit of knowledge, or maybe in some cases the great amount of knowledge that they may have on particular companies, can actually get in the way sometimes of not really understanding the markets. I mean, we have what I call a three-pronged approach. We look at fundamentals, and we talk to clients about fundamentals. That's your fundamental analysis. Then we look at valuation, and fundamentals don't mean anything without valuation. So you could love a stock, it could have a great management team, great fundamentals, great free cash flow, but it might be too expensive. So valuation is the second part. And the third part of that three-legged stool is trading. And the trading part is something that often is missed by people who aren't doing it every day. So, you know, since I've started in this business, my mentor said there's a drumbeat going on in the background all the time. So we do our own trading, and I think it gives us a huge advantage in terms of knowing when to get in and especially when to get out. So you have to have the combination of those three, I think, in order to make the right investment decision. And oftentimes a lot of clients come in with, you know, with some expertise in one of those areas, but not all three. And they don't all necessarily know because this isn't what they do every day. So my goal is just to get the understand what their investment objectives are, get the, you know, credibility up. And if they're looking for income, focus on that. If they're looking for growth, focus on that, or a combination of the two. Also do like you're doing and sort of look for some hedge or protection. So if the mandate is to buy bonds in this environment or to buy high yield bonds in this environment, stay in an area of the market that you will protect from interest rate risks. So shorter term high yield bonds, you know, we've been talking about that. That's what we own, both individually and as well as with ETFs. We did buy a little bit of HYZD, which is high yield zero duration ETF, so we can get rid of some of the duration. So if the mandate is to own high yield and you want to protect yourself, there's still ways of doing that.
I would agree. But you have to be like anybody else. Even though I'm on the conservative side, you and I are probably on the same line. I still wouldn't mind thinking a stock was worth $2 and it's trading 100, buy it at 100 and sell it at 200 to the next guy. I mean, I wouldn't mind doing that once in a while. Just
yeah.
Even though I never would. I mean, I'm sort of jealous of those they do. I know it's not my game, but I mean, I'm absolutely stunned. Maybe you can. This GameStop was a phenomenon. Why is that phenomenon not over? By now, everybody should know the company's not worth squat, or it's not worth that much, and yet the thing is still doing what it did a month ago. Why?
It's hype. It's hype, and it's also, you know, it's again, I think it's that fear of missing out, and it's sort of people having not a whole lot of understanding, but understanding one thing with that, well, one piece of that three-legged stool, maybe understanding that, hey, you know, with all this momentum here, this is the time to get in, or hey, you know, it looks cheaper than it was, you know, a month ago, let's get in, or hey, I like the story, I don't really know the company well. So I think that's the mentality, and I understand the mentality, but we actually, you know, like to maintain our position of having full discretion over our clients' money so that we can have a discipline to what we do and don't get caught up in these short-term things. You know, we can, you know, to add alpha, if we're going to add alpha, we generally are going to add alpha in names like I've mentioned, Thunderbird.
Yep.
Where, you know, we're buying the stock as a penny stock, but we still want to hold it long term. So we've had more than a double in that name. They came out with great earnings, like fantastic earnings last week.
Yeah, you were saying.
I mean, still a lot of upside there. Rather than looking at a short term play, and not that we wouldn't do that, but I wouldn't do that in a big way. I would do that just to add a little bit of alpha here and there.
Dan, if we could buy something at 20 at 8 o'clock, and sell it at 50 at 11 o'clock and go play golf, we'd do it. Just saying.
You know, if it's staring you in the face, absolutely.
Well, it never is. That's
if it's a layup,
yeah.
You know, no question about it. But I would not do it in a big way. I would do it just on the periphery of the portfolio.
I would do that part of the
portfolio, that 20% of the portfolio where you're adding, that satellite part where you're adding alpha opportunistically.
I'm half tongue in cheek here with you this morning. I'm agree with you 100%. I just, when it happens, you sit there and go, man, I could have done that. Why not? Somebody did it. I have a question for a serious one though. I'm not tongue in cheek anymore here. How much of what you see happening, really almost like day after day, up huge one day, down huge the next, how much of it is just momentum play? I mean, I get all the feeds from, Dr. J's group on the unusual activity. And I do a lot of options, as you know. Somebody will have, you know, an option in Oracle yesterday, for instance. And I'm going, man, this thing even earnings, it's not. We ended up putting a spread on in there, but an earnings spread. But there wasn't much activity in there, and it, you know, it's a real stack. And then all of a sudden, you'll see, you know, in Dr. J's thing, you know, 2,000 of these things traded or something. And I'll go to that stack, and all of a sudden, here's a stack I've never even heard of. And now, just because it seems, I'm asking a question, I'm not leading a witness. Just because somebody traded something, and obviously a lot of places now let you know when it is unusual activity, and all of a sudden everybody just piles in, and all of a sudden the thing is 100,000 trades. And I've seen stuff go by there, and it's a very useful tool for me and my clients, and I can see, you know, Jen, you know, does a nice job with it, but damn, there's some trades in there. I mean, silver's trading 25 last week or week before. Someone, he may end up being right. Some idiot bought like 40,000 of the 42 calls and paid up for them. I mean, the amount of trades that go by at massive size,
huge.
That never even see the light of day. They're not up for 30 seconds, let alone for a week or two before they go out worthless. I mean, the amount of money, I use the term, it's pissed away by some. I mean, whose money are they trading where you can do something like that?
No, I agree. And what I'm hearing and what I believe is that there's a lot of money in savings, like say over the last year or so when people have been in, you know, not lockdown, but they haven't been spending, they haven't been going out, they haven't been going out to dinner, they haven't been traveling, taking trips, doing as much business travel. So there's money that's sitting in savings. You know, they're collecting the same paycheck, many people. And we're not talking too much. You don't hear that too much in the press, but there are a lot of people who are trading, and there's a lot of younger people as well who are trying to learn the business, and probably more so than ever. I did a little bit of it when I was younger just because I was in the industry, but I didn't have the time, and most of my friends didn't have the time to be focused. And I think people have more time to be focused just because of the accessibility, you know, being able to trade on your phone no matter where you are, working from home and saying, hey, I'm going to take a break. You know, I saw some news on the stock, or a friend of mine told me about it. I think more of that's happening now than ever. And with the market going up, nobody wants to miss out. So that fear of missing out, I think, is really high. And the discipline that we have of trying to make our clients think long term and know you didn't just miss that one GameStop thing. You could have been on the wrong side of that trade, too, you know, is the explanation that I would give. Or like when I said years ago, I had an analyst who was pushing Carmike, and I said, look, you know, I'm going to let you do the homework on this, but I'm going to tell you why this isn't going to be a good long-term play. So I think it's, we have, as part of our responsibility, is to kind of temper that noise and temper those clients who have that type of, you know, expectation that they're going to win just like they're going to win big like they're, friends did, and or a friend did, and you can't. I don't think that's a way to make money. You know, following the trend, I think we get paid for not following the trend.
I would agree.
And staying away from, you know, exactly that type of like the GameStop situation or those situations. If I do get inquiries from clients, oftentimes when they pushed, and there's only been a few times over my career, but oftentimes when they really push hard, I'll buy a very small amount, and I sort of do it as a lesson to them to trade it and to watch it, and then after that, they never ask again.
Well, yeah, I mean,
so generally, they don't work out the way they're expecting them to work out, and I can tell them that in advance just from experience, but sometimes they have to see it for themselves.
Well, I will tell you this. I'm one of those, you know, like most people, if somebody comes wandering around with a penny stack and everybody gets into it, the thought of everybody getting rich except me,
yeah.
I ended up buying some of it, right? I've never made money on any one of them. The worst was, when Dr. J and I were on the score, Mike North was, came on after us, and he was all over this, I don't know, it essentially was going to be a gay radio station in New York City, right?
Yeah.
Which I had no problem with that, but the thing's trading for like, What was it, Manny? 0.0001 or something? Some incredibly number. So I bought like a half a million shares for like $500. Some incredible. Well, maybe it wasn't that many. It was 50,000 or whatever. But I got this huge hunk. They went out worthless. I mean, I've never even made it to a penny, for God's sake. I mean, I've never had any luck in any of these things. But when you're when you were talking about the savings part, I'm just looked this up here. You're right, and my question, Dan, is on a political side. Which, why is it that you're going to hear? You probably can't go till noon today without talking about savings per family going up. And in fact, with all the stuff that's happening, you're absolutely correct. Right now, the savings per family is $25,700. In 2016, that number was $8,300. However, today, the debt per taxpayer, just on the federal side, is, debt per citizen, debt per taxpayer, I guess it's sort of like a family, right, is $223,000, yet in 2016, that number was, I'm going to say, $168,000. So the average family's picked up $17,000 in savings. They've picked up $60,000 in debt to the federal government. The family, and that doesn't include state and local or county and all the other crap. and or personal stuff or student loan or anything. And you, you know, what the hell? I mean, we're not even,
yeah.
I mean, we're not, so the total debt per family in, of all debt of all kinds, your personal, your credit cards, your cars, your house, your federal government, I mean, the total debt per family in 2016 was like $829,000. I gotta believe it's over $1 million now.
Yeah, and, I think you're hitting on something that's really important right now, that this is something that's been creeping up over time. The household debt is, you know, as a percentage of income, as a percentage of net worth, is really you know, just as important as looking at what is going to happen and what has happened already on the government side, that we're going to continue to build up debt on both places. And there are going to be consequences to that at some point. The reason that I think it's, you know, it's not the easy money that we saw for mortgages back in 07, 08, but we're approaching that. I think we're approaching that same trend that we had right before that. One thing I was going to mention earlier is, you know, in terms of what we're looking at that we think has, you know, where do you, I don't want to use the word hide, but where do you find value right now? And we've always liked the short-term high yield. That's been our thing. 1 to 5 year, or even less than a year, high yield bonds. And the spreads right now are around 360. If you go back to June of 2007, the spreads got as low as 241. So we're still a ways off from the tightest spread, the narrowest spreads. But if you also go back to that period, that's when people were taking on more debt, especially on the mortgage side, and they were living above their means and all of that. And I'm not sure we're quite there yet. So we're maybe moving in that direction, and then as the cycle continues to extend, we will see days like the last few days where you see the 10-year rate come down, but then we're going to see, like next week, we may see the 10-year rate continue to pick up a little. So I think the trend is for higher rates. That's going to hurt people with individuals with debt. It's certainly going to hurt the government. It's not going to help companies either. So it's going to be, it may not be a rapid, as I have said before, it may not be rapid because you've got the other side of the trade. You have people buying as rates go higher. You have governments, you know, overseas buying U.S. Treasuries as rates go higher. So that's going to keep things from, you know, exploding on that side. But inflation is creeping in there with this, and that's going to certainly have an impact on these individuals who've decided to take out a lot of debt. I mean, they're going to have higher expenses. They already have higher expenses when it comes to gas and food, but they're going to have higher expenses when it comes, you know, at some point to, you know, refurbing their house or buying furniture or appliances or anything else that's going to be associated with, say, the housing industry or school.
Good luck. Good luck with that 2x4.
Medical field. So
we got a dash and good luck with that 2x4. Was it like doubled in the last 6 months?
Oh yeah.
Well, hey, yeah. By the way, real, I didn't get it down as fast. I'm sorry. The high yield ETF to use. I'd probably like to start. Was it HY what? And I haven't used that.
So for the short term high yield ETF, SHYG.
Okay.
SHYG. For short-term high-yield municipal, which I think makes sense right now, SHYD.
What was the one that was HY something something you said earlier?
And then there's HYZD is high-yield zero duration.
Okay.
So you're basically hedging out any of the interest rate risk. And one other that I'll mention that, because you were asking last week, you know, other areas. Same concept, short-term emerging market bonds, not equities, EMSH.
These things, are they liquid at all, these things?
EMSH.
Are they liquid? Do they have options on them?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, bud. Well, we'll talk at you next week, if not before. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, bud. SP Meter's up 26, NASDAQ Futures up 222. Come back with Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures, we got them brought. We're going. This is an update today. Yet another update. We've had big up days, big down days, but today it looks like we're on the move here. And I wonder if it might be going to continue for a little bit because the bonds have stabilized some. We'll see if they make another hop down or not. It doesn't look like it's going to happen today though because I've got the we'll tell all about it in a second here. S&P futures up 26. Nasdaq futures up 225. Dow up 108. Over in Europe, we've got. Just small here. DAX up 17.1%. FTSE down 2. Call that flat. CAC around up 11. That's 1%. Or 0.1%. In Asia, these guys are pretty quiet too compared to what they've been except for the Hang Seng. Nikkei up 175.6%. Hang Seng, is up 478, 1.6, but they've been down as much as 2-3 and 4% a couple days the last few weeks. Shanghai up 236 at 79 points. Those guys were down heavy yesterday. So, boy, if you just, the last week or two, if the Shanghai or the Hang Seng are down, if you bought that night a little bit, the next day you sold, you've made money like every day over there. But it's just going back and forth, back and forth. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was up 464 to a new record. That's 1.5%. S&P up 23.6%. NASDAQ, however, was down 5 points. It was actually down more than that as the day wore on. Or it was during the day, what I'm saying. So we were in a mixed bag all day yesterday, which has been happening more and more. I don't know what that means, but it's just been happening. 10-year, again, we're steadying out here at 1.50. It's down 1 basis point. Okay, that little shot to over 1.6, and it's come down and stabilized here. The bond, minus 0.04, back down to minus 0.35. It had made its way back up to minus 0.28 or so, and now it's come back down again. Japan, positive 0.11, so that's down 1 basis point. UK, 0.71, that's pretty much unchanged. Oil, wow, up 95 cents now, 1.5%. Your gas. I'm trying to give away gas in my Suburban, Matty. I believe people be lining up. $65. That's up 93 cents. Brent up $1.04, $68.94. This is up appreciably in the last hour since we gave this report. Natural gas down 3 cents as the country continues to warm. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.10. I'm going to say that was 1.68. I know Frank will probably. I'm going to say 6 weeks ago. So it's got to be up 25% in 6 weeks. That's pretty much for gasoline. Gold up 950, 1731, trying to make its way back up again from being down to like the 1680. So it was really getting hammered, but now it's coming back up. Silver up 25 cents, 2638. Copper up 7 cents, 411. And I do have to say to myself that I did get some of that gold and silver on the bottom for my clients. So get a good one every once in a while. Platinum up 18 bucks, 1220. And we've got the crypto up again today, only 279, but up back up to 56,632. And I gotta believe, man, it's right about a record number. You know more about that than me. Every other one of these things, though, is down. Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, and Bitcoin. Bitcoin Cash. I don't know why that is. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Coming up on 38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build on the inbound Kennedy, but no accidents or issues to report. Edens looks okay. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower and Stevenson 2. Same for the Ryan, but again, everything all quiet as far as accidents are concerned. So a pretty normal Thursday morning as traffic volumes continue to grow as more and more people are feeling comfortable going into the office, it would appear. Off the expressways, a couple of crashes to report up in the northern suburbs. US 41 at Buckley Road, there's a crash. And then west of there, US 12 at Old Rand Road, there's an accident blocking the left lane. And then south of there in the western suburbs, looks like we have a crash, Route 59 at Lake Street. But everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, clouds early, mild temperatures, colder than it's been the last few days, but still very pleasant out there. Could have some sunshine later on, a high of 55, which is right near where we're at right now, where it's mostly cloudy and 53 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 66 today. Right now it's clear and 50. In sports, the Bulls and Blackhawks both in action tonight. Bulls returning from the All-Star break. They'll host the 76ers at 7 p.m. Bulls are currently tied for the 8th place in the Eastern Conference. Blackhawks are at Dallas again. The Stars blew the Hawks out 6-1 the other night, so Hawks looking for revenge tonight. That's a 7:30 p.m. puck drop. Suns, for our Phoenix listeners, are at Portland tonight, 7 p.m. Arizona time. College Hoops, a busy slate today and yesterday and for the rest of the next few weeks as we're in conference tournament mode right now and heading into the NCAA tournament. DePaul season is still alive as they upset Providence at the Garden 70-62. They'll take on UConn tonight in the Big East quarterfinals. That's 8 p.m. tip-off. Notre Dame season's over. They were embarrassed by North Carolina 101-59 in the second round of the ACC tournament. Northwestern lost in the first round of the Big Ten tournament to Minnesota 51-46. Gee.
So what if DePaul wins? That's not going to happen.
Well, I don't think they're going to beat UConn tonight, but if they did, then I think they're, I mean, they'd have something going and they could surprise some people in the Big East, but they've had a dreadful season.
You see the Hawks.
Better than Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're probably about the same.
The Hawks, they got a young team. They hustle. Patrick Kane is, I mean, I've watched the guy all these years. He's better this year than he ever has been. I mean, he's, you can tell when he's on the ice. I mean, the other team, they play differently, but
their number one pick, too, Kirby Dach, who's been out all year with injuries. All of a sudden believes he may be coming back soon. He's ahead of schedule, that would be interesting. I can't wait to see that kid play.
But the one kid, what's his name, begins with a K, is a rookie. He's had a big year. He's real good. He had a hat trick one night. Tells his name. But I mean, where you see them all of a sudden when they're playing Columbus and those teams, they're doing fine. And all of a sudden, the last week where they had three games with the Stanley Cup champ, and you could see why they would lose the Stanley Cup to those guys 4-1. You know, now this week, these guys are good, too, right? Would they really lose the other night?
Dallas. Yeah. And that's who they play again tonight. Yeah, they're cleaning up on the Detroits and the Columbuses and they played Florida okay, but they're getting their ass handed to them by the Tampas and the Carolinas and now Dallas.
Well, because they're good, right?
But you're just playing the same five teams over and over again, it would appear.
Yeah.
Which is kind of boring, but.
It is a little. I'm surprised. So there's not going to be a hockey All-Star game?
Is that the case? I didn't hear.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, where's it going to be? They won't let anybody fly back and forth. Where would it be?
NBA had theirs without a problem.
Well, but not really. Toronto's not in Toronto anymore.
No, I know, but they still had their All-Star game.
I know what I'm saying. No Canadian team.
If the Canadians are still in Montreal.
Yeah, the Canadians are still in Montreal. That's my point. I should have been better with that. But there's a whole. There's what? How many teams up there? Eight? They haven't been here.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they haven't been here all year. So, no, unless you get a special dispensation to meet at Niagara Falls or someplace, where are they going to have the All-Star game? Buffalo?
Good question.
They could shuffle off to Buffalo and do it outside, you know. Just saying. Frank, what did you think of conversation with Dan? It was interesting. Dan's got these hybrid ETFs. I'm dying to look at some of these. Maybe my clients might want some of these. The ETFs on I'll use the term junk bonds. Non-investment grade, that's the polite way to say it. I use the word junk. High yield. High yield is now, you don't say junk anymore, you say high yield. It's all in the semantics.
Well, how high is high yield now? When you have you're in the 2-3% range, high yield doesn't have to be that high.
Well, that's what he was talking about, that the spread is down. I should have asked him, because I knew you were going to ask.
Well, that's how we learn, is by asking each other questions.
But I'm saying back in the day when the guy, I forget this guy's name all the time, now I'm starting to act like Joe Biden, what he's described as, Milken, there we go, the guy with the toupee that went to jail, right? And then they made him take his toupee off in jail. Remember that? He didn't look the
right.
Anyway, he invented essentially the junk bond, the
Drexel Burnham,
the non-investment grade bond. Maybe the guy ended up going to jail. He ended up getting co-opted and doing some insider trading, and I think they probably had the daggers out for him anyway. But he ended up in jail. Okay. Not to go through, I don't know.
And he's the only guy that's really redeemed himself from all those guys over the past 30 years.
What about Belushi? He redeemed himself in the movie. Go out there and redeem yourself. who's the other guy? The guy from Smith Barney. Solomon Smith Barney that supposedly gave all the bad reviews on AT&T, and as soon as Smith Barney got the IPO, then all of a sudden he changed his reviews to saying they were good. What's his name? He's on all the time. Skinny guy. What the hell's his name? I'll think of it. Anyway, when I'm in the middle of the story here, and of course I wandered off.
My fault.
No, it wasn't. I do it on my own. The story was that the guy was a genius, because then if you wanted money, you either had to go through the Goldmans and the Morgan Stanleys of the world and have an IPO, or you had to go to a bank, and both of those people basically, you had to bend over and spread them. I mean, I know that's gross, but it's exactly what had happened. They ruled the industry. And what Drexel Burnham did was say, we gave you a third way. Instead of doing that, we're going to take, and Milken was an absolute genius at this. He provided an alternative way for smaller firms that probably didn't belong on the New York Stock Exchange in those days to go find investments. Now, what he did, though, is if he came to a Frank Fahey or a Matt Weber with, you know, all kinds of money, he'd say, I have 15, 20 places that are not investment grade, but get a load of this. They're gonna pay you 11% when I think the going rate for corporate bonds was, what, 7, Frank? So I'm going to say the spread was 11. It was 4, 3.5, 4, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, just wing out there if I'm wrong here, because I'm just kind of thinking going forward. But the story was, Matty, you'd get a piece of 20 bonds. And because you're getting 3 or 4% higher, theoretically, out of the 20, if one of them went under, you still were okay. Right, Frank? It was like 1 or 1.5. You still were okay because
you... 1.5, I believe.
Was the average. And over a period of time that he was doing this, he actually did better. Because instead of the 1.5, wasn't the failure rate something like 0.8 or something? It wasn't even 1. And because he put these things in. So it actually ended up being a really good deal for you. The idea is, if you look at economic theory, and if you think there's a perfect competition, a perfect market, okay, if one group of people are rated in such a way where they're making 7%, and the next group of people are rated a little worse and they're making 11, all right, you got 4% difference. So if 4% of the companies go under, you're at the same place, right, Frank?
Mm-hmm.
So he actually selected companies where he did better than that. But then he got a little crazy with, you know, other stuff that had nothing to do with that, and ended up in jail, and now he's out, and like Frank says, he's redeemed himself pretty well. And he got his toupee back, which I think was really needed. For him. What an awful thing to say. But he looks back like he used to before, a little older. Where I'm getting to this, if you start talking about risk-free rate being 1, so your risky bonds are, say, 5 or 5.5, which is what Dan was talking about, I don't think the math works there, Frank. Because now, if one of them goes under, I think you're kind of screwed at 5%. Or certainly if 2, right? I mean, it doesn't work the same as when it's at 11.
No, it doesn't.
And even though the spread...
Because 11 may go down to 5 then.
Yeah, but even though the spread may be the same, the math doesn't work there. You know, that's what I've been having, for those who listen all the time, know that that's my biggest problem with this whole mess of interest rates being where they are. None of the formulas that you and I learned, Frank, none of... capital asset pricing models, none of them work at the extreme. I mean, if an interest rate goes from 12% to 6%, a building that returns, you know, $100,000 a year could very well double in price. Okay, but if interest rates go from 1.5 to 0.75, I don't know that it should double in price, Frank. Even though the formula says so, right? And I'm saying it probably should.
You need a correcting variable when you're on the wing like that, I think.
Yes.
And we don't know what it is.
Well, because now the risk is it can only go one way. It can only go again you, not for you. It's probably not going to go to 0.75, even in Europe. I'm not exactly sure, Frank. I mean, I'll put it this way. I'll bet any of the listeners, Mr. Weber, anybody who's ever listened, I'll bet you a beer that you and I cannot go out and borrow money for a negative rate for the Frank and Chief Plumbing Company in Frankfurt. If somebody says, not only do you guys need $1 million, here's $1,100,000, knock yourself out, and pay me $1 million.
Yeah, we'll throw in a bass fishing boat.
Yeah.
Truck to
I mean, the thought of that remotely happening, I can't even. Let's put it this way. If somebody's been able to do it, my hat's off to them. Hey, I want to build this building. I walk up to Matty Weber and I'll say, what kind of interest rate you want? What do you mean? I'm going to pay you to take my money. You're going to pay me to build a building?
That's what the lenders did for Trump Tower in Chicago.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, and they gave him river water on top of it. Now they're pissed off he took the river water. But
well, he never renewed it.
Well,
if you have a license to steal, you should renew the license.
I don't think he ever got a license for the water because he was over the code.
No, he had a license to do it or an exception. But it expired like in 2 years, and he never renewed it.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, if you're on the river, okay, in the middle of the summer, as hot as it is, lake water.
This is in Chicago.
Yeah, lake waters. Yeah, thank you for the city. Lake water, which lake water essentially makes it into the river at some point, is probably never gets above, what, 70 degrees, Frank?
Maybe, 72, probably.
72. So most of the time, like if you got to turn your air conditioner on in May, I'm going to guess the water is, what, 45? So one of the ways to cool your building is just, if you're right next to the river, is to suck in some water, cool your stuff down and send it back up in your place. I mean, this is not genius.
Heat exchange, yes. They have those units.
And, massive. I'm going to guess it probably doesn't help you much in September when the lake water probably could get to 80 or 75. Could, maybe. But certainly a few months of the year, it's worth a lot to you instead of electricity. Well, you still have electricity to run the heat exchanger. But anyway, there was a code of how much you're supposed to take. What did Trump take? Four times that amount or three times that amount, as usual?
Yeah.
And
didn't pay for it.
Didn't pay for it. So, you know, I tell you what, the guy know. There's one thing's for sure. Well, we'll never have a president ever again that knows as much how corrupt politics is from the underside as that man.
Well, or how corrupt oligarchs are in general.
Well, yeah, he knows himself how corrupt
everybody.
He is. But you and I, as much as I'm going to say, for a guy who's been a traitor, I mean, I talk to people all the time. I got a lot of acquaintances. I won't say, and I hear these stories because people like talking to me, and I like talking to them. And we just, and you know, I'll go in some place. I don't care if it's a coffee shop, a bar, whatever. Somebody's sitting next to me. If it's on an airplane, we're talking, right? And whatever that person does for a living or whatever, I'm fascinated by it. I don't care if he's a truck driver. I don't care if he's an engineer. I don't care if he's an air conditioning guy. I'm fascinated by it. And it's just me. I mean, it makes me nuts, I think, probably. And you learn about all this stuff. I still don't know the full mechanism, since I've never been in a business that did it, how exactly you pay off your alderman and your lawyer, and if you're supposed to have a four-story walk-up, all of a sudden I end up with five. You know, because you see it happen all over the place. So and Trump, him and his family, were geniuses at that, and in a bad way. I mean, the dad and what's his name, the kids, the son-in-laws. And for those of you who don't know, a lot of New York was rent-controlled buildings, which means if people didn't leave, you couldn't raise their rent. And of course, people would have, if it's Frank Fahey could be 140 years old, and his grandson Frank Fahey is still going to tell you he's the same guy. I mean, you know, they play all kinds of games on that end. But the thing of it is, people had to move voluntarily. Well, if Frank Fahey is 95 years old, and all of a sudden the elevator from the ninth floor never works, you probably got a pretty good chance of Frank Fahey leaving, quote, voluntarily, right, Frank? And Trump.
Oh, and he'd do things like hire illegal immigrants, of course. to start doing construction on a floor that 24 hours a day.
Yeah, all kinds of little the elevator's probably, but I mean, even the city probably would look pretty bad at the elevator being constantly out when people in there are 90 years old. But, I mean, that's one of the tricks. I mean, not having lights. I mean, all kinds of things you could do to make a place unlivable, they were masters at. And once a certain number left, then you could turn. You didn't need the last guy to leave, Frank. There was some number. If like 60 or 70% of the people left, I shouldn't even be spouting it out there. But there was a number. Once you got over that, you could go under. You could make it non-rent control, right? It wasn't. You didn't. If one person
and
stuck there, I don't.
Fred
think.
Trump was a master of it.
Yeah, the old man was the absolute master of it. I don't know if was he better than the son-in-law's dad, or were they pretty good at it, both of them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was probably the only landlord in New York that didn't have any black tenants.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not like...
I mean, for example, I mean, it's never-ending what these guys do.
But, I mean, the same thing has happened here, and the people who are in charge of the Chicago Housing Authority, most of those people were black. They weren't white.
Yep.
You look at 30 years ago, here's Cabrini Green. You know, somewhat of an eyesore, obviously. It didn't work out the way people intended. The only time it got better was when Mayor Byrne moved into the place. And this is before the, I don't know what they've done, but you don't really see too many roaches anymore. But in those days, Jane Byrne said the first thing she did was walk in was check the walls to see how many were crawling around. Anyway, but I mean, it was pretty hard to, here's my question, Maddie Weber. When you tear down like a Cabrini Green, where do all the roaches go? He doesn't. He has
good
no
question.
Because I mean, were they just crawl on the ground like over at our house or what?
I assume so.
Because I mean, literally, how many think we're in one of those high rises, Frank? How many million roaches? Just saying. But I mean, you look at that stuff, and all of a sudden, here it is, 40 years later. There's no Cabrini Green. There's people with, you know, 2 and 3 story walk ups. The tax base is incredibly
high. They
still
have the townhouses at the south end.
And you know why? Because they. So that's I can tell people it's still 25% low income housing. That those houses were never part of Cabrini Green, and they got annexed just so they could get into the formula. Just saying. But I mean, these things just happen, and there's always people behind them. And I would love to say that Frank and I know the inner workings of this. We can just know it's going to happen, and we see it did happen. But how you end up getting that deed, Frank, from were those deeds Chicago Housing Authority or were they Housing and Urban Development? I mean, who actually owned the property?
How do you get it? I couldn't last 6 months with a state job, and that's been proven.
Yeah, it has been proven. all right, Frank, I did want to ask you one thing. Brother Dan, since we've covered a lot of other stuff here already today, Brother Dan dug out this food price index from the United Nations, all right? And I'm stunned. This is the world price stuff. I mean, you and I have been bitching and moaning about inflation going up here. On the world scale, since last, they're all based on 100 points. I don't know what the base year was, but since last year in June, the cereal, the price of cereals around there was cereal. When you say cereal, we're not talking about grape nuts. We're talking about bread and cereal is all in the same, column.
Right.
Since last June, where the number was 96.7, it's now 125.7 in February, so that's a 30% increase in 7 months. That's outstanding, and we've got a couple of minutes here, but Dan went back, because he's that kind of guy, to 2010, 2011, and 2012 when it topped out at like 142, and of course he put those in brackets, and he said, here's was the Arab Spring and all the worldwide rebellions that took place. It's all totally correlated with where people... I mean, he's saying that the average person in all these places, you know, you name it, in Gaza and all these places, that it's essentially 5 hours a day that people have. I don't know if they get up to the government or what they do or they work, but the average, and they can pretty much feed their family on that just by buying bread and that kind of thing. I mean, they're not buying prime rib. And once you get to the point where you can't feed your group and people start to get hungry, that's when these revolutions, I won't say start, but that's when they start to percolate, and it's because all of a sudden people are hungry. And are we approaching that, you think, or is this just a one-off?
Boy, I don't know. I've been looking for something bad to happen. But no, I don't think so, because we're starting to get more and more a move towards one-party rule. I mean, look at
we've had
43 states pass 250 separate laws to make it harder to vote.
Well, I'm talking about worldwide. I'm not talking about here.
Worldwide? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, nobody in America cares about Africa or knows anything about Africa, and most of Asia.
Well, probably.
Well, you know, third world, you know, isn't that what they do? Revolt?
Well, I mean, everybody cares about China in the sense that if you go to the IKEA and the shelves are bare, you got a problem. Right, man?
They may have to have Swedish white-collar criminals make the stuff.
Well, what did Dan say last week, man? You were here last Thursday, weren't you? When Dan said that he is invested in this company that does container shipping. He goes, the stuff coming from China, they're jammed. They're loaded. And going back, they're empty. Man, I'm sure they're not empty, but he goes,
Trade war work?
Yeah, how'd that trade war work out? He goes, the stuff... Anyway, we'll talk Monday, Frank. Have a nice week. Have a nice weekend, buddy. S&P futures up, not only up 23, they were up 27, but still up. NASDAQ futures up 207. We'll see if we stay up. I'm actually a little long. Please stay up, because I'm long, and when I get short, you go the other way. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.